Live from our nation's capital, this is Bloomberg Sound On.
No president should be able to sustain boots on the ground without congressional approval and without a clear explanation of what the mission is and what the end game is.
This isn't really about the economic policy. This is about the coronavirus.
Bloomberg Sound On. Politics, policy, and perspective from D.C.'s top name.
We must use every tool possible to defeat this assault on women's reproductive rights.
This is a steady growth that we're seeing here in our economy, you know, over the last 3 months.
Bloomberg Sound On with Joe Matthew on Bloomberg Radio.
They say they have a deal on a framework to pay for reconciliation. The big three at the podium today on Capitol Hill. Speaker Pelosi, Senate Majority Leader Schumer, Treasury Secretary Yellen. And Bloomberg Sound On was in the room for it all. Coming up, we'll tell you what we know about that deal, how Democrats plan to handle government funding and the debt ceiling. And we'll discuss it with Congressman Jim McGovern, Democrat from Massachusetts, who's smack dab the center of this debate as chair of the House Rules Committee. We'll also dig into all of this drama with Mick Mulvaney, former acting White House chief of staff, former budget director as well. We'll talk about a possible default later with Mark Zandi from Moody's, and we'll get analysis from the panel, Bloomberg Politics contributors Jeannie Shanzano and Rick Davis. It's been another very busy day on Capitol Hill. Those of us who attended Speaker Pelosi's weekly briefing this morning were treated to a couple of unexpected guests. As I mentioned, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen on the stage, along with Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, they all walked in together to make an announcement.
Okay. I have a brief sentence, and that is that the White House, the House, and the Senate have reached agreement on a framework that will pay for any final negotiated agreement. So the revenue side of this, we have an agreement on.
So there's an agreement on pay-fors, okay, but no final price tag or any new details on what is inside. Of course, reporters tried to ask more of the speaker, but that's essentially all we got, though Pelosi also pledged to keep the government running, making clear that Democrats will handle the debt ceiling alone if Republicans refuse to help. And House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy today confirming, again, they won't.
The Democrats have a mechanism already in place to use reconciliation to pass it with a simple majority of their members in the Senate. If they want to raise and spend another $5 trillion, that's what they need to do.
I went upstairs later to talk with the chair of the House Rules Committee, Congressman Jim McGovern of Massachusetts, been awfully busy lately, and started on as we sat down in his Rules Committee chamber what he's telling his progressive colleagues who are now threatening to vote against infrastructure if reconciliation does not come first.
So, look, what we need is an ironclad guarantee that we're going to get the human infrastructure bill. Mm-hmm. And I think if we can get that, then maybe some of the hesitancy in voting for the traditional infrastructure bill will reside. But, you know, I myself want to make sure we have an ironclad commitment that we're going to move forward on the reconciliation bill. I want to make sure that we're not going to do one bill, which, by the way, is good. In my opinion, it's not great, but it's good. There's a lot in that I support. There's some stuff I don't support, and there's a lot that's missing. But, you know, I'm willing to vote for it as long as we get the other bill, too. Hmm. We need them both. And that was the original promise, and we ought to keep to it. And so the issue now is, let's figure out what it is the reconciliation bill looks like, which is the human infrastructure bill. Let's figure out what we can all agree on. Let's find the areas where there's disagreement and see whether we can hash something out. But let's get to the finish line. A lot is at stake here. I think it's not only the future of our economy and the well-being of the American people, but the Democrats control the White House, the Senate, and the House. I mean, people want us to deliver. Now we have razor-thin margins in both, and we have a very diverse party, but nonetheless, American people are tired of bickering. They want us to deliver, and so this is the moment for us all to come together and let's deliver for them.
A lot of this is on your shoulders as chair of the Rules Committee to make all of this happen, to bring bills to the floor. Is it possible to have a vote on both on Monday?
Well, I mean, even if we came to a deal on the human infrastructure bill, the reconciliation bill, mm-hmm. I mean, just logistically, there is, it takes time, right? So we have certain procedures we follow here. You know, we got to make sure the bill is written perfectly. We want people to have a chance to read the bill. I mean, so you just can't do it like that. So maybe the better option is to delay the vote on Monday and, you know, give us a little bit more time. And if we get to the point where we all are getting to an agreement, we trust each other, mm-hmm. then, you know, we can move on that and then, you know, and move on the other one later. You know, the reason why people are insisting on having the human infrastructure bill go first is because that is where we're hearing some resistance from some of the Democrats in the Senate.
Yeah.
And so the deal here is, look, let's get to a point where we trust each other, and then we can move forward on, you know, and which order won't matter as much.
Do you want to wait to hear what the Senate is willing to accept, or do you want to pass a bill in the House, send it over?
We have to pass a bill that the Senate could pass. Otherwise, this is a
sure.
a meaningless exercise. Right? So, I mean, so, and as we speak, committees of jurisdiction, you know, in the House are actually talking to their counterparts in the Senate to try to make sure that whatever the language we put in this bill is acceptable to mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. So we're already beginning that process.
It's been suggested, Representative Jan Schakowsky even alluded to this when I was speaking with her last evening on the program, that maybe you pass the bipartisan infrastructure bill and put it on the shelf until reconciliation is figured out, not send it to the White House quite yet.
I don't know whether you can do that. I mean, the deal is that, I mean, I think there's some constitutional questions about, you know, the Senate's already passed it.
Yeah.
You know, we pass it, then it goes right to the White House. So, you might be able to delay it for a little bit, but I don't think that that's an option.
Understood.
Yeah. So I think a better option would be to maybe delay the vote on the physical infrastructure bill until we're further along on the human infrastructure bill.
Mm-hmm. While we're talking reconciliation, the debt ceiling is in the air today. Everyone's talking about it. It appears that Democrats will have to handle this alone. Is there enough time to do that through reconciliation? There seems to be some disagreement as to whether you'd make the deadline.
Right. And there's also some debate as to whether reconciliation is the vehicle to do it in. Mm-hmm. I talked to Senator Sanders yesterday, who chairs the Senate Budget Committee, and he's had some reservations about that. But I don't know. We're trying to figure that out. Look, the idea that Republicans are turning raising the debt ceiling into a political football is like political malpractice. I mean, there's lots of stuff to be political about. I mean, everything in this town is political. They don't like the reconciliation bill. You know, do what you got to do on that. You know, you don't like, you know, this bill or that bill. But when we talk about raising the debt ceiling, we're not talking about future spending. We're talking about paying the bills that we've already accumulated. And by the way, when Donald Trump was president, I couldn't stand his policies. I fought tooth and nail against his obnoxious tax cut bill that benefited the rich and big corporations. And by the way, it added to our debt considerably. And yet when it came time to vote for the debt ceiling, I voted for it. I mean, I tried to stop his bill that accumulated, you know, trillions to the debt. I didn't succeed. Well, you know what? But just because I didn't succeed doesn't mean I have the right to say I'm not going to pay the bill. We all have to pay the bills we've accumulated. And to play Russian roulette with this, that really does jeopardize our economy. It sends a message to the world that we're like, you know, out of our minds. It's so stupid. And when I hear Mitch McConnell say, well, you know, it's up to the president's party to carry the day. Boy, he didn't say that when Donald Trump was president. And this is the one thing that really shouldn't be about politics. You want to cut spending, then you pass bills to cut spending. Cut taxes, pass bills to cut taxes. So you want to raise taxes, you pass bills to raise taxes. You know, we make those decisions, but after those decisions have been made, to go back and say, no, I'm not going to pay the bill, that's political malpractice. And by the way, over 97% of the total debt that would be covered by this happened before Joe Biden was president. So it's like, give me a break.
This seems to be a lot of confusion about that. As even Kevin McCarthy said, that Trump spending has been paid for and that this would allow Democrats to spend more going forward? Or are we just playing with American public?
Kevin McCarthy is not only misinformed, but, you know, in my opinion, is a poor excuse for a Republican leader. I mean, I'm just so sick of the lies, not only on things like this, but, I mean, his complicity with all things Trump-related, you know, his unwillingness to even allow a truly bipartisan commission to go forward to get to the truth about January 6th. So Kevin McCarthy, in my opinion, is just noise and that makes no difference. You know, he's desperately trying to endear himself to, you know, the kind of lunatic fringe within his conference, so that he can stay as leader, and obviously he wants to be Speaker of the House. But, you know, I mean, it's political malpractice. And again, Kevin McCarthy didn't say that only Republicans should raise the debt ceiling when Donald Trump was president. So, I mean, the hypocrisy is, well, it is what it is. I mean, I've run out of adjectives to describe, you know, what I think about him.
Congressman Jim McGovern, Democrat from Massachusetts, chair of the House Rules Committee. As you heard the buzzer behind us, they were voting today, and a good chance to sit down and pick the brain of the man who has to actually write the rules to get all of this business to the House floor. We turn to the panel quickly here. We've got Rick and Jeannie with us for the hour. Bloomberg Politics contributors, as promised, Jeannie Shanzano and Rick Davis. Jeannie, you just heard from the rules chair here and a little bit of news that he made about what might happen on a couple of different fronts. I have to admit, I'm drawn to his comments about Monday. There was supposed to be a vote on infrastructure Monday, as Pelosi promised moderates. Jim McGovern now suggesting that vote be delayed until we have enough trust, he says, between moderates and progressives when it comes to reconciliation. Do you think that's how this ends?
That is a distinct possibility. Progressives, we understand, asked the president to push for a delay. The president apparently said he'd think about it. McGovern just echoed that to you. So, you know, I do think that is a possibility. I'm not sure, though, how progressives are going to take to that. Let's not forget, Josh Gottheimer said a long time ago, the longer you delay this, the more time goes by, the more likely this thing is that it dies.
That's for sure. Rick, we talked yesterday about comments from Representative Jan Schakowsky, was on this program and suggested, you know what, maybe we vote on that infrastructure bill on Monday, then we leave it on the shelf, wait to send it to the White House. You made note of this, and work on reconciliation. McGovern there is suggesting that that may not even be constitutionally allowed.
Yeah, I think that these things are all linked to certain days that it takes for the House of Representatives to print the bill and send it to the White House. They have a certain amount of leeway, but certainly not like at their discretion. And I think part of what the chairman of the Rules Committee, who you just interviewed, portrays is something that I find absolutely fascinating about this whole process, which is a minority group of few, right? Whether it's the moderates in the Senate within a Democratic Party, the moderates in the House within a Democratic Party, the progressives in the House in a Democratic Party, the minority is driving all the process. And the majority, which we all brought up in the majority rules, can't seem to get a breakthrough within their own party. And so I think all this gets done, but I think it gets done in probably the mechanical fashion that's been described, reconciliation, and the Democrats have to take ownership of it. But they still have to unravel this incredibly huge reconciliation bill that is nowhere in the last week.
We still have a lot of blanks to fill in, even though, as again, the leadership today announcing a deal on a framework, they say, for pay-fors, which, as we all chase Nancy Pelosi down the hallway to get details, she said, the news conference is over. This is a great step forward. I want to bring in Mick Mulvaney now, of course, the founder of Exegis Capital, the former acting White House chief of staff, former OMB director, former congressman, and I know I could keep going. It's like the longest business card in Washington. Mick Mulvaney, welcome back to Bloomberg Radio. You must be scratching your head watching this whole debate go back and forth, because you've been on all sides of this. You've been on both sides of the negotiating table. You've been through debt limits. You've been through reconciliations before. I just wonder what you make of the framework announced today. And as you look at the schedule, you look at the calendar, if you think any of this is possible to get done in time.
Oh, man, what a great bunch of questions. I was laughing as you were telling the story about Nancy running down the hallway saying the press conference is over. Because your point is well made, which is that they said there was an agreement. They said there's a framework. And when people asked, OK, what is it? They said, we're not going to tell you, which is a fascinating way to negotiate. But again, that only exists in Washington, D.C., but that's par for the course in Washington, D.C. To your panel's point, I think this gets done. I just don't think at the end of the day that Democrats are willing to walk away from the table with nothing. I've heard conjecture that the longer the bill goes on, the harder it is to pass. And that's true, by the way, that bills get uglier the older they get, because when you have a, you know, let's say it's a 10,000-page document, people are actually going to get a chance to go through it at some point, and they're going to find a bunch of stuff they don't like. And so it does get uglier as it goes on, and that tends to encourage people to think this thing might fall apart. But at the end of the day, I know these folks enough to know they're not going to walk away from the opportunity to pass something on their own. They are very concerned about losing the House in 2022, the Senate less so. But if, as soon as they lose one of these bodies, they don't have the ability to do this. So I think sooner or later, Nancy will have her way. Something will pass on both infrastructure and the social spending bill.
Mick, can you give us some straight talk about the debt ceiling? I've been asking every lawmaker about this, and it seems like it depends on the party you're in at the moment as to how you answer. The debt ceiling, as Nancy Pelosi says, is a credit card, and it needs to be paid off. It has to do with covering past spending, money that's already been allocated, as opposed to what we're hearing at the moment from the Republican leadership, Kevin McCarthy today suggesting that it will allow Democrats to spend more going forward. Why are we doing this every couple of years, having this same debate?
Both of those are mostly true. Again, Washington uses a different language. So when you ask for a straight question, those are actually straight answers in Washingtonian.
I love this. Okay.
It's not straight answer in ordinary English. A couple straight answers in ordinary English. Both parties use the debt ceiling as leverage. It's the nature of the beast. It's one of the things that has to get passed in Washington, D.C., just like a yearly spending bill. Why do we do a spending bill every single year? Why isn't all the spending on automatic control so that you don't have to vote on it every single year? There's a bunch of things like that in Washington. It's what we call must-pass legislation, and it gives typically the minority some leverage, which is why everybody still kind of likes it. People forget, and most of my Democrat friends forget, that in 2000, I think it was 17 or 18, the last time we raised the debt ceiling, the Democrats used it as leverage to increase spending. They would not support a clean debt ceiling increase when Donald Trump was president unless they got more spending. That's typically what the party in the minority does. So both parties are guilty of it. But that's not unusual. That's how Washington works. Some of these things have to pass, and that gives people leverage. What you're not hearing, though, interestingly enough, is enough discussion, I think, about the fact that the debt ceiling is the quintessential thing that can be reconciled. In fact, the Budget Act of 1974, which creates reconciliation, made it specific that the debt ceiling can be reconciled, which means you only need 50 votes in the Senate. Mm-hmm. The Democrats have the ability to do this by themselves, and I'm not sure entirely why, yet they aren't doing it. It may come to that. They may have no choice.
Do you think there's time to get that done through reconciliation? That also has been up for debate. You need 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or can it truly be done?
They can do whatever they want to. They can stop the clock if they want to. The Senate can vote to stop the clock. I'm not making that up. Mm-hmm. You can do it if you're in the majority in the House, if you're in the majority in the Senate, you can pretty much do whatever you want to if the minority goes along with it, especially in the Senate. There's a lot more minority protections in the Senate than there are in the House. You just talked to Jim McGovern, who's a good guy, Rules Committee chairman. But if you ask him the right question, what he'll tell you is they write a separate rule for every single bill. So they change the rules every single day in Congress, and they could change those rules in order to make reconciliation easy. What this is really about, I think, is the Democrats are worried about the politics of passing a huge spending bill and then in the next breath raising the debt ceiling without any Republican support. That's hard to sell in the heartland. It's hard to sell in those purple districts. It can be used against them politically, and that's why I think they're not doing it yet.
We're spending some time with Mick Mulvaney here on Bloomberg Sound On. The other big one, of course, is funding the government here. We're a week out. Mick, you've seen this movie a lot of times. Republicans aren't going to buy the bill that had the debt ceiling in it. So it looks like Democrats will come back with a clean CR. Is there any chance that you see right now that not getting done in time or the government stays funded?
No. While the debt ceiling can be reconciled, the spending bill cannot. So the bill to keep the government functioning, the short term, what we call a continuing resolution, a CR spending bill, does have to have 60 votes in the Senate. And I think by the time you get up against September 30th, everyone's deathly afraid of a government shutdown in Washington, D.C. I think we all prove the voters don't really care about it, but they're deathly afraid of it. And at the end of the day, before September 30th, there will be a clean CR passed in order to probably fund the government through probably December.
Before you go away, I want to ask you quickly about crypto. You founded, before it was hip, the Congressional Blockchain Caucus.
Oh,
you're also on the board.
Remind me about that. Because Bitcoin was $204 when I started.
Oh, jeez. I'm not going to ask you how many coins you own.
I thought it would be a conflict of interest. So I did. My bunch of kids in my office bought it and made a great deal of money.
Wow. All right. We need to interview them next. You're also you're on the board at the Chamber of Digital Commerce. Looks like this is going to be regulated. What does the SEC need to do and what should they not do in attempting to regulate, I'll say, cryptocurrency instead of specifically Bitcoin, the coins themselves? How should this work?
Yeah, I think they just need to be cognizant of the power that they have to do both good and evil. I'm talking about the SEC now. The industry has been asking for some guidance, and that means regulation, for a decade now. Simply because, especially when crypto first came out, we weren't really sure what it was. Was it an asset? Was it a financial document? Was it a currency? What was it? And they were looking for guides, and they're still looking for that. What the industry is fearful of is overreaction and oversimplification. Washington works in 15-second sound bites, and it's really hard to regulate a complex market, which is what crypto has become, in 15-second sound bites. So we don't want overreaction. Someone to say, "Oh my goodness, crypto is used in ransomware attacks, therefore it's evil. Let's get rid of the darn thing."
Yeah.
That's what they're hoping to avoid. And I think what you're seeing, interestingly, is a very technology is developing faster than ever. We all know that. I actually think it's maturing socially faster than ever. And I think many of the crypto companies now, many of the coin operators have figured out that they have to behave like more mature companies. It's the days of them, you know, sitting in their basement and launching anonymous attacks on Instagram against a senator has to go. And they need to behave more like mature financial services providers. And I think you're seeing that. And I think that bodes well for reasonable regulation guidance going forward. I'm not a betting man in this particular circumstance, but if I were, I would think that the SEC ultimately will come down and do about the right thing and will not regulate this industry out of existence.
Fascinating take from Mick Mulvaney. Did you say it was $240 a coin?
Yeah,
then?
$204. I was waiting for it to
four.
Go below 200. Yeah.
Oh, goodness
gracious.
We'll talk about that again. Mick Mulvaney, thank you so much for walking us through all of that. Former Office of Management Budget Director, Acting White House Chief of Staff, founder of Exegis Capital, with us live on Bloomberg Sound On. We are fulfilling the mission of this broadcast. I hope you've learned as much as I have in the last 20 minutes as Mark Zandi warns about the potential for a default. We're not there yet. We have to still get through the government funding deadline next week, but as we've heard from the Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, sometime in mid-October, it's going to count. And as Democrats try to figure out the way forward here without Republicans, it seems, the chief economist at Moody's Analytics, Mark Zandi, is warning that even a short default would be costly for generations, and he's with us right now. Mark, welcome back. It's always great to have you on Bloomberg. Do you, for starters, see a default coming?
I think the odds are low, just because logic would dictate that lawmakers wouldn't go down that path, right? I mean, if they did, I think it would be cataclysmic to markets and to the economy. They must know that, and given that they know that, this won't go there. But You know, having said that, there's a lot of moving parts here, and a lot of things have to get done before the drop dead date, which by my calculation is October 20th. So there's a lot of risk here. And the other thing I'd say is, you know, the longer this drags on and the more it becomes partisan, that, you know, the Democrats by themselves have to get this done, I think that just sets this debt limit drama up to be even more of a problem down the road, because the party that's in power is going to have to do it on their own without the other, and that's going to be a problem.
Well, we've seen the credit ratings agencies act just on the concern before, right? How close do you have to get to the cliff before S&P or Moody's start questioning our credit worthiness?
I don't speak for the rating agency. I don't know. I mean, obviously, S&P, you know, downgraded U.S. Treasury debt back in the 2011 drama over all of this. So according to S&P, we're no longer AAA. So, you know, I don't know what the rating agencies are thinking, but I think in the minds of investors that if you get, you know, if you could go down this path too many more times, certainly if you default, I mean, then, you know, I can't imagine the ratings won't change.
You write that even if resolved quickly, in a note to clients, Americans would pay for this default for generations, as global investors would rightly believe the federal government's finances have been politicized. That's what we're really talking about here, Mark, that politics have creeped into policy to a point where you can't predict what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's right. I don't think people recognize the value of the fact that global investors think when they buy our treasury debt, it's money good, you know, that they're going to get their principal and interest payments on time. And that principle was established at the founding of our nation. Alexander Hamilton, the first Treasury Secretary, did that with Revolutionary War bonds. And that has reaped so much benefit to us in the form of much lower interest rates than in the rest of the world. And the dollar is the reserve currency, and that is a tremendous benefit to us. And, you know, to give that up because of some crazy, you know, political chicanery around something as silly as the debt limit is just, you know, mind-boggling. Mm-hmm. So it's really very important that, you know, lawmakers kind of come together here. As, you know, I know it's hard to do, but, you know, it makes complete sense to come together, because this is a shared responsibility, in my view. Both Republicans and Democrats have passed legislation that have contributed to deficits and higher debt, so it's a shared responsibility for them to raise the debt limit, and that's the right thing to do.
Does it send a message that it will not be bipartisan, that this is now, in fact, politicized to the point where apparently only the majority party can handle it?
Yeah, I worry about it. I mean, I think there's still a shot here, although that seems to be falling in probability pretty quickly, that, you know, maybe the Democrats can put forward a bill that funds the government, you know, past the October 1st date, includes a suspension of the debt limit for some period of time, and the Republicans at least don't filibuster it. Not, they don't have to vote for it, right? But just not filibuster it. But, you know, if they do filibuster it, then it's going to be on the Democrats to, you know, do it under the reconciliation bill, that big $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill. And that, you know, again, they can do it, but it's going to cost us. It means that we're going to be lined up for, you know, very, very partisan, you know, debt limit increases or suspension in the future. And I think that means more uncertainty. That means higher interest rates. And it's going to cost us as taxpayers, and it's going to cost our economy.
I know you're an economist, but you're also a watcher of Capitol Hill. Do you think it ends up in the $3.5 trillion reconciliation, or do they create a different vehicle, if not a separate reconciliation bill, to do that? I know that there's only supposed to be one, but, hey, you know, they write the rules.
I don't think they can. Yeah, I don't think they can. No, under the rules, they can't. So I don't. I think they, you know, there's obviously a lot. This is part of the point. There's tremendous confusion around this because, you know, obviously we don't go down this path very often, but when you invoke reconciliation, the reconciliation process, it's very complicated. And, you know, you have a parliamentarian in the Senate who kind of decides what can go in reconciliation or not. So there's, you know, all kinds of arcane, you know, rules here. And that's one reason to be a little, you know, somewhat nervous that even if the Democrats decide, okay, we got to get this into our reconciliation bill, that, you know, they may not do it in time. They may actually, you know, misstep and someone doesn't get paid on time. So that risk is not inconsequential.
That's why this conversation is important. I realize that, well, I mean, there are good intentions in getting this fixed, but sometimes it doesn't go the way you plan. And that's why a brief, even a brief default is something that you're writing about. But you also point out, Mark, lastly, in your note that when the U.S. has come close to defaulting or saw payments accidentally delayed in the past, each time investors demanded more return for buying Treasury securities, forcing up government borrowing costs. Is that still possible?
Yeah, I think that's the case. I mean, there was a really interesting event back in 1979 when the Treasury, because of a word processing equipment failure, couldn't get Treasury bill payments out to investors on time. It was completely inadvertent, a mistake. You know, it was the payments were made up, you know, within days. But the careful study shows that that caused, you know, interest rates to remain elevated for months. And it cost taxpayers tens of billions of dollars just because of that silly, simple mistake. And now, can you imagine, you know, if it's an intentional mistake, you know, an intentional default, you know, that we knew better, but we still did it because of political reasons.
Yeah.
That'll cost us, you know, a lot of money going forward.
God forbid. Mark Zandi, Chief Economist, Moody's Analytics. Mark, thank you for helping us understand a little bit more about this and what risks we might be facing.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Joe Matthew on Bloomberg Radio.
You heard Congressman Jim McGovern, chair of the Rules Committee, at the start of this hour, the Democrats saying Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader in the House, is misinformed on the debt ceiling. And he had more to say than that.
Kevin McCarthy is not only misinformed, but, you know, in my opinion, is a poor excuse for a Republican leader. I mean, I'm just so sick of the lies.
And we did hear from Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader in the House, had his own things to say about Democrats.
They have their internal firing squad right now upset with each other because one side won't vote for it unless they get reconciliation. So whatever agreement they come upon is not about the infrastructure bill. It's about whether they can spend $5 trillion.
Good thing we have the panel. Rick and Jeannie are with us. Bloomberg Politics contributors Jeannie Shanzano and Rick Davis. Rick, what do you make of this? When you get to the point here of coming up on deadline, something needs to happen. You need a break. We're talking about a lot of money. This is when the ugly politics start to emerge, right, in some of the talk that we're hearing.
Yeah, because you've got to get to an end point soon. And so everybody's really staking out some pretty tough positions. It will be interesting 2 years from now, if the Republicans gain control of the House of Representatives, to hear Speaker Kevin McCarthy complain about having to raise the debt ceiling because the Democrats spent $5 trillion on public interest spending. And it's the same conversation we're having now about the Democrats claiming this is all Trump debt. The bottom line is there are ways to get this done. I agree with what Paul Zandi was saying, that the risks far outweigh the politics on this. And I'm really scratching my head because having spent, you know, a lot of time in politics, I don't see how anybody gains a political advantage on something like the debt ceiling. Voters aren't going to vote for that. Government shutdowns are incredibly unpopular. And so I really don't see the political upside to any of this gamesmanship that we're seeing on both parties' side right now.
What do you make of this, Jeannie? The debt ceiling, we've talked about it a lot, but it's clear that Republicans are not going to be involved in this, and Democrats will have to go it alone. But after our conversation there with Mark Zandi and after what we talked about with the Congressman McGovern, it's likely that if this is going to be handled, it will have to go in the existing reconciliation bill, which could make things even more complicated.
It could. And, you know, Mark Zandi at one point said something about maybe common sense will prevail and, you know, maybe they would work together. And, you know, listening to those two clips that you just played and, of course, to the conversation going on in Washington for the last few months, it is clear that that is not going to happen. And to your point, Democrats are going to have to go this alone. You know, it is fascinating because, of course, this is this game that both sides have been playing with the debt ceiling over the last decade or so, and it is going to be increasingly used as a tool for them to extract from the other side some kind of concession. But if you think about it from the perspective of Americans looking at this, to bring the United States to this point of such a dangerous level, as Mark Zandi was talking about, so that you can extract some kind of concessions that, to Rick's point, voters don't even vote on, it is going, you know, it is hard pressed to imagine where we are today in Washington, D.C., when we are left with this. And, you know, even the basics we can't agree to, the facts, at least our leaders can't agree to. Whose debt are we paying, the past or the future? You know, that's a basic question that nobody seems, at least in leadership, seems to be able to agree on.
Mick Mulvaney, Rick said it's both.
Yeah, parts of it is both. I mean, it allows you to spend more, so you're releasing some of the limits on what the debt you can have. But, like, it's also the past, right? It's both Donald Trump spending, but it's also $1 trillion of stimulus package that Joe Biden put on the table the very first week he was in office. So I think one of the things that we're missing, and Zandi mentioned this, he said, you know, as long as Republicans don't filibuster this in the Senate, you can get a CR through right away. And he's right, because of the technique called unanimous consent. It could get brought up it on a standalone basis. Republicans say nothing. Unanimous consent passes, and you're off to the races. The problem McConnell has with that is he can't control Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, and Rand Paul. If those three guys were out of the room when they did this, you'd probably get this to go through without a single Republican no vote.
Boy, can you imagine a world, Jeannie?
I can't imagine a world. And I think one of the stunning things I've been looking at is that you have even some of the more moderate Republicans who are willing to let this happen. We've heard from them, people like Mitt Romney, Lisa Murkowski, and others who, you know, are willing to bring the nation to this brink to make this point. And that, to me, is part of the story that's been underreported. The Republicans have hung together on this willingness not to vote. Even you can't even find 10 of them to vote to fund the United States debt or to lift the debt ceiling.
Want to get back to this framework announced today on reconciliation, the pay-fors, even though we don't really have numbers. And frankly, there's no bill. They haven't agreed on everything that's going to go in this. When Chuck Schumer announced that we have a framework to go forward here, he's got Janet Yellen at his side. He was quickly left the stage. And of course, reporters had nothing but questions about, well, what does that mean as Nancy Pelosi's at the podium?
Explain what that means. Expand on what that means, a framework. What does that mean exactly?
That means we're proceeding, that we've made great progress and we're proceeding. Yeah. But we now went further because there were some specifics. We are in a situation of lamb eat lamb. There's so many good provisions. What is affordable and what is effective and what gets the best results as soon as possible. So we made great progress this morning because it's in the writing. You know, you hear everybody coming out and talking about one thing or another, but we are writing legislation.
Writing legislation, essentially, I guess, Jeannie, an effort to say that we haven't given up on this. We're still moving forward, but we can't tell you anything about it.
That's right. And the quote of lamb eat lamb, I'm not even sure what to say about that. But, you know, that I think is part of, you know, when you described her as running down the hallway, that's really what I think we're seeing is the Democrats trying to be optimistic, trying to keep people together and saying there is movement forward. But it's hard to know what to think when not even a top line is understood, let alone any of the details in this framework. Because truly, if they could get to a framework where they could get to a vote on Monday, we may see movement. But, you know, without any details, you're hard pressed to know. Yeah. Now, let's say they could hammer this out Friday through Sunday and get to a vote on Monday. Otherwise, they're going to be facing a lot of pressure from these moderates to hold that vote in the absence of an agreement on the reconciliation bill.
Just to make everything clear here, she wasn't running. She was being chased by reporters, but she was running at her own pace. By the way, can somebody bring me in on Lammy Lamb? What are we talking about, Jeannie?
I'm not sure I was going to ask you.
I started Googling. I don't know. Rick, is that a saying? I don't know.
No, you asked her. Let her come up with the answer to that.
Rick, go ahead.
It could be lamb eat lamb, not dog eat dog. Is that where?
Yeah, but what does that mean?
I have no idea. Yeah. I'm sorry I asked now.
You know, look, I think one of the answers to that question is that you know, Chairman Neal, you know, House Ways and Means Chairman, came out a week ago with a $2.1 trillion dollar amount that he says he can raise through revenue raising to fund the reconciliation package. He didn't say he could get $3.5 billion. He could get $2.1 trillion. I'm sorry. Sometimes I get billions and trillions mixed up because I used to think $1 billion was a lot of money. And I guess that's not the case anymore. But assuming that, I mean, like they start with $2.1 trillion that they had a week ago that they identified. Does that mean the top number is coming down to meet that? Does that mean they found new money? I think these are all legitimate questions when they bold blatantly say, oh, we found all the money we need.
Right.
John McCain used to have this great line when he was at a fundraiser. He says, you know, the good news tonight is we've raised all the money we need for this campaign. The bad news is lots of it's still in your purses and wallets.
Rick Davis, ladies and gentlemen, and Jeannie with us for the hour here. I have to ask you quickly about crypto because we got into that for just a bit with Mick Mulvaney and the push to regulate crypto, which appears to be inevitable. It's just a question of what form it will take. And Mulvaney, Jeannie, seems to think that this is a reasonable end to this story, that this will be handled properly by Gensler and the rest of the SEC.
I do think there is a good chance. I think it's something where you do see at least, some bipartisan agreement on the need. What that looks like in the end, I think, is a different question. But I do think it's one of those areas, unlike policing and potentially infrastructure and some of the others, where we may see Congress make some progress. And let's be clear, it is much needed at this point. So, you know, to hear him talk about, you know, and you asked him about that, the crypto caucus that he ran so long ago, it's fascinating that how much that was in the zeitgeist even then.
Isn't
and how
right?
much it's fascinating.
$204 a coin. I could feel his pain. I'll tell you what, though. I don't know if you heard from Tom Brady. Yes, that Tom Brady wants to be paid in crypto. He talked about it on Jim Gray's show on SiriusXM.
The digital age is upon us. I don't think we're ever going back. We're using the technology and information to track things much better. And I definitely see a world where players are going to be paid in cryptocurrencies in the future.
I don't know where Gronk is when you need him here, Rick, but is that the equivalent of the shoe shine boy telling you to buy stocks?
Absolutely. This is the one goat who doesn't need any extra cash is willing to take the future bet on crypto. Okay, fine with me. But look, I mean, obviously the SEC is not happy with the current state of the crypto industry. And Gensler's made it totally clear that they're going to do something about it, whether it's on the lending side or whatnot. So stay tuned. There's more to go on crypto.
All right. We have confirmed, Rick and Jeannie, it's lamb eat lamb. Think of how much we've learned in the fastest hour in politics. It's called Sound On. And thanks to everyone for being with us. Congressman McGovern, Mick Mulvaney, and of course, Mark Zandi, along with Rick and Jeannie on the panel here. We'll do this again tomorrow, the Friday edition, with our Reporters Roundtable. I'm Joe Matthew. This is Bloomberg.